Mary Raftery, the investigative journalist who died last year, was a tenacious force in Irish journalism, both in print, in magazines like McGill, and in RTE, in documentaries which broke ground on institutional child abuse, as well as her last work on the state of Irish mental hospitals. Since Mary's death, tragically far too young from cancer, her friend and colleague Sheila Ahern has worked to establish a fund to support investigative journalism. Sheila, tell me who's behind the fund and what's its intention?
When anybody dies, there's often left a vacuum, and people do want to, particularly when somebody dies so young, want to fill that in some way. And we all felt that Mary's legacy needed to be nurtured and extended. And a group of friends and family got together to look at how we could do that. And we felt that encouraging and supporting investigative journalism was the way to do it. The fund is currently supported by the One Foundation, a philanthropic group, and we've had three rounds so far. The third is open at the moment. We'll have applications in the next couple of weeks. But it's been fantastic. There's been a great response for the previous two rounds. The first was in relation to mental health. The last documentary series Mary worked on, Behind the Walls, looked at the history of psychiatric institutions. The second was about migrant issues. And the third will be about children's rights. So they're all areas that Mary would have worked on over her career in print and in broadcasting.
And Sheila, what is the state of health of investigative journalism in Ireland? Because there are still plenty of obstacles to investigative reporting.
There are. There were always obstacles, and there are new ones, new challenges at the moment because of the state of the economy. Journalists and broadcasters, whether it's in print or in broadcast media, are faced with having to turn over stories very, very quickly. They're tied to a desk. Their resources are Google, online and on the phone. And really, you can't investigate something just by using the internet and by using the phone. You need to get out and talk to people. It takes time, and it often doesn't give instant return. And papers need stories printed on a daily, on a weekly basis. And it's a real investment in time and money to allow journalists to go out and get out on the ground and go talk to people and find stories. And I think that's always been the case. And if you look at the past and you look at people who would have spent months and years, Mary worked on States of Fear, I think, for about a year before I came on board. And then it was another 6 months or longer before we went into production. And we would have talked to perhaps 30, 40, 50 people. And all you saw on screen was maybe two or three of all those people that we spoke with. And that takes time. That can't be done quickly.
Now, we're talking in this episode about RTE post the Father Reynolds incident, which was something, I guess, that struck terror into every journalist's heart. Did the Father Reynolds report, the libel and the fallout from it, did that have a chilling effect on investigative journalism?
I think it's had a chilling effect on everybody. And the big lesson to learn, and it was something I learned working with Mary for so many years, everything absolutely has to be checked, double checked, triple checked. There was no end to the amount of checking you can do right up until transmission or print. We would have looked at everything. Now, things can go wrong, but with Mary, it never happened. We were never in a situation where we got it wrong. Sometimes we didn't have access to the same information that subsequently came out when we did States of Fear. We didn't have access to the archives of the religious orders, for example. We had access to the Department of Education archives. What we were saying, we knew to be true and factual because we had spoken to so many people and we had looked at the state records. And so when the Ryan report came out, there was that kind of nervousness. But as it turned out, everything was absolutely as Mary had said. But when you don't have access to all of the information, it can be very difficult and very nerve-wracking. The bottom line, you know, check and double check. I remember when I started working with Mary very, very early on, we were doing a programme about gold mining. And she'd asked me to find an expert on mining. And I'd come in, I said, I found this great guy. And, you know, he's done amazing things and he's done this, that and the other. And she said, how do you know that? And I stopped and said, he told me. And it was one of those very early learning experiences. She didn't have to say a thing. I just knew, right, OK, I'll go and find out some more. But, you know, you can't ask often enough and you can't check often enough.
And what kind of work has come out of the fund to date?
So far, the first round, which opened in September, And the first round was in December just of last year. So the first pieces will only start to be published and broadcast in the coming weeks and months. So it'll be very, very interesting to see how it goes. It's not huge money, but I think it will afford people that luxury of time to perhaps take a couple of months out of their normal working life, away from the desk, to sit down and concentrate on one particular area and subject and give it that time that's needed to do a proper investigation.
So people come to you with their suggestions?
There's an application process. People can apply. The fund is administered by a company called DHOR, Communication Company, and they run seminars for people who are interested in applying. They can come along, find out what the criteria for the fund is, and then make applications. I think there were about 20 applications in the second round, about 18 in the first round. So they're the kind of numbers so far. We will be looking at the future of the fund. The One Foundation has been extremely generous for the first year. They're wrapping up their operations soon. So we'll be looking at to continue this, because I think it's really important to have something like the Mary Rafferty Journalism Fund, and hopefully others like it, to support and encourage not just young journalists, but people who are in existing jobs who need just that time out to do the work.
Has there been any stories that we might be familiar with that have come out of it so far?
Gosh, I can't, because nothing has been published yet. But there's been really interesting, and it's just nice to see people taking side angles at news stories, because if you're a reporter in a newsroom, you're left with looking at, you know, how, what and where something happened. But to actually stand back and say, well, why did that happen? You know, how did that come about? To get in and ask those questions takes time. And it'll be really interesting. I'm very excited to see in print and on air what comes out of the fund, and hopefully it will have a long future.
But you're not sure if it'll continue beyond this round yet?
Oh, we're very optimistic, and we're working on looking at possibilities. And it is a real challenge at the moment with finances and the economy the way it is. It's a real challenge to look for people who can come behind and support this fund. But we're very optimistic.
And so, Sheila, where are your applications coming from? Are they coming from the established newspapers, broadcast outlets, or are these freelancers?
The applicants are from a very wide range of newspapers, freelance people who will be submitting pieces on a regular basis. I think the first piece to be published is from a regional newspaper. Radio and TV. Now, the fund isn't enormous. The maximum you can apply for is €18,000, which won't fund a television programme or a radio programme. But what it will do is give somebody the research time. So we've had independent radio journalists, we've had people from the Irish Times, people from the established papers and broadcasters as well. It's been very interesting. And students, some people who are fresh out of college, who have really good ideas and are burning with enthusiasm and energy to do the work, which is great.
So you're basically potentially supplementing the spend on investigative work in RTE and the Irish Times.
Yes, to some extent. It depends on the story. The story is the important element. And if it wouldn't get done otherwise, yes, absolutely. If somebody can take time away from their desk at whatever newspaper, be it RTE, be it the Irish Times, the Independent, Examiner, whatever it may be, if it gives them the time to do the work that will give the results, yes, the fund will do that.
Tell me about your judging selection. Who selects the applications?
There's criteria for application. So if somebody is interested in applying, they'll have to look through those and make their application based on the criteria. After that, there's a judging panel of five people who go through in great detail the application in terms of its impact, the value for money, the originality of the idea, and how the approach to investigation. So there's a number of criteria. Olivia O'Leary is the chair of the panel. We also have Cullum Tobin, who would have been a very close friend of Mary and worked in McGill with her many years ago. Conor Brady, former editor of the Irish Times, and Mary Corcoran, who's professor of sociology in NUIM, and myself. And the five of us would sit down and read through all of the applications and have a long and very robust meeting about. And it's great because we will argue about the various applications. And there's strict criteria, so people know when applying what they need to do.
So you've got heavy hitters on the judging panel.
Heavy hitters, some very good people.
And do you want to remind us how people can apply to the fund?
All of the information is available on the Mary Rafferty Journalism Fund website. Details about when the next round is and how to apply are all available there.